"Mercer," she asked on singular engagement, "what's wrong down here? You all seem so tense." It was a struggle to convey the emotional weight she wanted. "Nothing is wrong." He smiled as they passed under the archway at the foot of the tower. She stared at him, dumbfounded. He had answered on the general affinity band an extraordinary breach of protocol. Mercer caught her expression and sent a wordless query. "This is," she began. Then her thoughts flared in alarm. Inoni. She couldn't perceive Inoni. "Mercer, it's gone. No, wait. I can feel it, just. Mercer, something is trying to block affinity." "Are they?" His smile hardened into something which made her jerk away in consternation. "Don't worry, little Syrinx. Delicate, beautiful little Syrinx, so far from home, all alone. But we treasure you for the gift you bring. We're going to welcome you into a brotherhood infinitely superior to Edenists." She spun round, ready to run, but there were five men standing behind her. One of them, she gasped, his head had grown until it was twice the size it should be. His features were a gross caricature, cheeks deep and lined, eyes wide and avian. His nose was huge, coming to a knife edge that hung below his black lips. Both ears were pointed, rising above the top of his skull. "What are you?" she hissed. "Don't mind, old Kincaid," Mosul said. "Our resident troll." It was getting lighter, the kind of liquid redness creeping across the island's polyp which she associated with Duchess Knight on Norfolk. Her legs began to shake. It was shameful, but she was so alone. Never before had she been denied the community of thoughts that was the wonder of Edenists. "Inoni!" The desperate shout crashed around the confines of her own skull. "Inoni, my love, help me!" There was an answer, not coherent, nothing she could perceive, decipher. But somewhere on the other side of the blood-veiled sky, the Voidhawk cried in equal anguish. "Come, Syrinx," Mosul said. He held out his hand. "Come with us." It wasn't Mosul. She knew that now. "Never." "So brave," he said, pityingly. "So foolish." She was physically strong. Her genes gave her that much. But there were seven of them. They half carried, half pushed her onwards. The walls became strange, no longer polyp but stone. Big cubes hewn from some woodland granite quarry, and old, the age she thought she had seen on the approach flight. Water leaked from the lime-encrusted mortar, sliming the stone. They descended a spiral stair which grew narrower, until only one of them could march beside her. Syrinx's ship tunic sleeve was soon streaked with water and coffee-coloured fungus. She knew it wasn't real, that it couldn't be happening. There was no down in an Atlantean island, only the sea, but her feet slipped on the worn steps and her calves ached. There was no red glow in the bowels of the island. Flaming torches in black iron brands lighted their way. Their acrid smoke made her eyes water. The stairway came out onto a short corridor. A sturdy oak door was flung open, and Syrinx shoved through. Inside was a medieval torture chamber. A wooden rack took up the centre of the room. Iron chains wound round wheels at each end, manacles open and waiting. A brazier in one corner was sending out waves of heat from its radiant coals. Long, slender metal instruments were plunged into it, metal sharing the furnace glow. The torturer himself was a huge, fat man in a leather jerkin. Rolls of hairy flesh spilled over his waistband. He stood beside the brazier, cursing the slender young woman who was bent over a pair of bellows. "This is Cleo," Mosul's stolen body said. "You did say you wanted to meet her." The woman turned and laughed at Syrinx. "What's the point?" Syrinx asked weakly. Her voice was very close to cracking. "This is in your honour," the torturer said. His voice was a deep bass, but soft, almost purring.